Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show. Fox Sports Radio. Coming to you from the lovely city of Angels. When Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio. You know, there are things that make us kid ourselves into believing that our process was right because we become result-oriented. Right? Last night, the Philadelphia Eagles won. Game is, by the way, currently being replayed on the NFL Network. And it's not the first time, and I've watched it several times over, so I do actually know, I don't think, I know what I'm saying is true. The Philadelphia Eagles are not a great football team. I'm not sure they're even a really good football team. They have some pieces I like. They still may make the playoffs. And yet, if I was in their boardroom today, if I was in their front office today, I would say loudly and clearly, men and women and whomever else is in this room, we are actually closer to a rebuild or a remodel than we are to a reload. Let's not get it twisted, right? True, if Nelson Aguilar catches any of the three game-winning receptions he could have caught, their record would be above 500. True, if Deshaun Jackson was healthy, he would take the top off the defense, and you'd have even more room for their tight ends and running backs and other wide receivers to catch the football. If Alshon Jeffrey had been healthy earlier in the season, maybe he wouldn't be such a malcontent. Here's the problem. Deshaun Jackson's over 30 years old. He's less likely to be healthy as his career goes on. Alshon Jeffrey is, always hurt. Lane Johnson's either hurt or suspended on a yearly basis. This we do, in fact, know based upon his history within the league. They have other pieces that are close to retirement. And then the biggest change between the 2017 Philadelphia Eagles and the 2019 Philadelphia Eagles is their defense. That defense was third on third downs, fourth in yards allowed, first against the run, fourth in points per game, and they hit the quarterback the third most times in the National Football League. This year's defense hits the quarterback the 19th most time, the 23rd in the red zone, 19th on quarterback pressures, and they've allowed the seventh most passing touchdowns. By almost any statistical measure, they are an average to below average to frankly bad defense. You can tell me it's about injuries. You can tell me it's, you know, the problem with winning a Super Bowl is you lose some pieces. All I can tell you is with a division where, keep in mind, this is not your average division. This is not a team that's playing against a ridiculous schedule. The Philadelphia Eagles are not only below 500, okay, at 6-7, but they have currently two wins over two good teams, and their own division has one team already fired their coach, the Dallas Cowboys going to fire their coach, the New York Giants look like they're going to fire their coach, maybe even their GM. You're in the worst division in football, and you can't get above 500, even though you've had your quarterback the entire year. We can point to all the other stuff, but this is just not that good a football team. That's it. They don't have the personnel of the Cowboys. And yet, in a dysfunctional year with a dysfunctional division, they can't separate themselves. 23rd in red zone defense. That's below average. 19th in quarterback pressures. That's mediocre, which means average. 19th in points per game allowed defensively. Mediocre. Average. And they've allowed the seventh most passing touchdowns. That's below average, sub-mediocre. It's atrocious. You can tell yourself it's the injuries, but shouldn't the division kind of balance that out? Right? You can tell yourself, well, it's just one of those years where everything goes wrong. Or does everything go wrong for a reason? Like, look, we should own the fact that the Eagles were the best team in football and won the Super Bowl, in spite of the fact they had a backup quarterback who was kind of playing on a hot streak. But they won it because the defense was so good, the running game was good, and allowed Nick Foles, and the play calling was good, and they ran into a Patriots team that was not super talented, and they just outscored them and got one more quarterback pressure, one more turnover, one more stop, and won a Super Bowl. This is not because they're 6-7. This is not, let's not be result oriented. Result oriented will tell you, oh, listen, if we make the playoffs, then we're good. No. Alshon got hurt again. Deshaun's been hurt all year. Some of your linemen close to retirement. Defense ain't great. Now, I'm not saying they should do what the Redskins need to do, which is strip it down and start over, or light a match, if you will. They're not the Bengals. They're not the Dolphins. Okay, they're not a team that, they're not where the Raiders tried to get to last year. Okay, this is, if the you like the house analogy, you buy it. Okay, you probably need to redo the kitchen, redo some bathrooms. You need to knock it down any walls. Paint the whole house, put in some new carpet, maybe some floors, and you're good. But what could happen is your house, you look on Zillow, and your house is worth a little bit more than your neighbor's house. Well, that's because your neighborhood sucks, not because your house is so great. Right? They're not the Saints. They're not the 49ers. They're not the Vikings have a ton more talent. Hell, they're not even the Packers. And I know they beat the Packers. Right, but they're not. They're not one of those elite football teams. I mean, look, they're not the Seahawks. They're just not. But the best of the best are Niners, are Saints, are Vikings in terms of talent. Maybe you go Packers. The next tier is Seahawks. The next tier is Cowboys in terms of talent, right? The next tier is probably Packers. I mean, think about the Bears. If they figured out their quarterback situation, who would you rather? Would you rather have their defense or just your quarterback? Kind of what it feels like. So, again, this is not light a match. This is not, they say, my neighborhood. You don't scrape it. Okay? You don't knock it down and start over. On the other hand, in a bad division, you are a sub-500 team with an elite-level quarterback and an elite-level play caller as head coach. And yes, you're injury-plagued and mistake-plagued, and you've had a lot of drops. But if you think that winning a couple of those games would change the fact that you need a bit of a remodel, you need a freshening of the roster, you're kidding yourself. Which is what happens a lot of times when you end up going to the playoffs. Is you start thinking in your head, well, you know, we made one play here, one play there, we win another playoff game, and then all things are great. No.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Here's the Patriots statement, and it's a pretty interesting one. It doesn't say a ton. The production crew is independent of our football operation. We accept full responsibility for the actions of our production crew at the Browns-Bengals game. I do tend to believe them, but I also believe that whoever is in charge of them should be fired immediately. Here's why. Look, we all have a past. I have a past. If you don't know, just read the comments anytime I tweet something. apparently it's new news to people that something I did and admitted to doing 21 years ago is worthy of response to the fact that I said George Kittle's not much of a blocker in comparison to Rob Gronkowski. Somehow, right? I don't really understand the correlation, but on Twitter it makes sense. We all have a pass. And knowing that, I'm very sensitive to some of the sponsorship deals that we do. There's a company called LifeLock, who is a sponsor of our show on sports radio. And I was like, look, I didn't steal anybody's identity. I want to make sure that's clear. It's not the same crime. It's not really actually close. But I did steal somebody's credit cards, and I did use them 21 years ago. And if you want to make that correlation and not have me read your advertisements on Fox Sports Radio, I fully understand. Full disclosure is important. So, look, it was closer in terms of proximity and time, but Spygate is still front and center in any Patriot, any NFL fan's mind. So it's not that the Patriots had any knowledge, the real actual working Patriots and football team. I tend to believe that. But the idea that somebody didn't say to the cameraman, hey, man, whatever you do, don't film the other team sending in plays. The league is kind of sensitive to that, and fans are kind of sensitive to it, right? It's like they're not going to draft, the Patriots aren't going to draft a tight end who may or may not be involved in a murder. Why? Kind of sensitive to it. I mean, it's the same reason the Patriots had to get rid of Antonio Brown. They're kind of sensitive to issues with women off the field, the owner. Right? So anytime you have a past, and most of us do, you have to not only be cognizant of it, but you have to make sure you fully disclose this is our past and let's stay as far away from that as possible. Far away from that as possible. So I don't think that the Patriots had anything to do with it. Not just because it's the Bengals, just because I don't think anybody's that stupid. And I don't know why the cameraman did such a thing. And then, you know, the worst possible admittance of guilt is like, supposedly he said like, hey, can we just throw the tapes out and start all over? Yeah, no, no. That's you get caught, right? Let me just, that's telling the cop who pulled you over. Well, do you want the beer? Why don't we just pour it out in the gutter and just let me go home? Call it even. You know? What if I just went over to the passenger side? Or how about you take the beer, I'll leave my keys, and I'll just Uber home. We're good, right? Like, yeah, not really even close to the way it works. Alcoholic shouldn't be anywhere near a bar. And the Patriots shouldn't have anybody filming anywhere near somebody else's sideline during an NFL game. By the way, the ultimate irony of it is, apparently the segment's called Do Your Job, and either the cameraman was really doing his job, or more than likely, was not actually doing his job, while trying to cover an advanced scout who was doing his job. So, the whole story is amazing. The one team who gets caught doing this is the Patriots. On the other hand, they get caught doing it against the Cincinnati Bengals, whom everybody would say, like, if you're going to cheat, why the Bengals? Right? How about some of those Ravens plays seem to befuddle you the first quarter when you're down 21-0? That might help. Ooh. What about a team like the Houston Texans who just whooped your ass? Film their plays. You don't need to film the Cincinnati Bengals. Maybe figure out how to stop Pat Mahomes in the first half. Figure that one out. Those will come in handy when you get to the playoffs. Right? And you can give me the, hey, Patriots lost two games in a row. They're getting desperate. This is what the Patriots do. I don't think anybody's that stupid. Definitely not the Patriots. I just don't.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific.
Let's welcome in Chris Sims, Pro Football Talk and Football Night in America. Do you believe the Patriots football staff had no knowledge of what was going on in Cincinnati?
I do. I totally believe it. You know, first off, I worked there, right? I think I've told you this, Doug. I was never around a team that followed the rules more. I mean, we couldn't have a $5 bet on March Madness. Like, that would, you'd get a memo the next day that said, don't do that. You know, the other things, too. Listen, I know everyone's going to go, there's a history here, all right? Hey, Deflategate, that was a Tom Brady thing. That's not a New England thing. Spygate, okay, at that time, you know, there was nothing really written in the bylaws of the NFL that was illegal. Yeah. Maybe not like ethical, but you know, Belichick's really smart and he's getting back at Eric Mangini too. So, you know, with this one, I think the thing I look at is obviously there's a reputation, right? I don't think New England's stupid enough to send credentialed people into another team's press box and as they're filming the sideline, like thinking they would get away with it. Number two, like Bill Belichick isn't going to like trust some, random video guys to, you know, come through and crack the code of the sideline signals of the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean, this is one of the smartest people I've ever been around before, ever. I just think the video crew's stupid in general. It doesn't sound like anything I've heard that they're a part of the football part of the organization. So, no, I'm not buying it one bit.
Okay, I agree with you. I would say that the guy that's the dumbass is whoever was in charge of the production crew.
Yeah.
That's like one of the things, hey, guys, listen, before you go out and film this thing,
right,
just a reminder, we're the Patriots. We've got a little bit of reputation. Be extra careful around filming any other team and their plays and their signals, right?
That's 100%.
The whoever is in charge, whoever the executive producer is who hired,
yes,
that's the guy who takes the fall.
You're 100% right. Exactly right. I mean, you got to know the full, you know, scope of the situation. You said it right. You're the Patriots. There's a little reputation there. They've had some, you know, issues there already. And I just can't even believe it. Yeah, whoever's in charge of that department is truly stupid to let his people film the sideline for 8+ minutes or whatever it was.
Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's get to what's actually on the field for the Pats. The bad news is they still don't seem to have the playmakers, right? And
right,
there doesn't seem to be an appetite for Antonio Brown, and he's the only guy really out there who could be a difference maker. So you're going to roll
right
with what you got. The good news is, in spite of the fact they don't have those playmakers, they're a couple blown calls away from either tying or beating the Kansas City Chiefs, who are one of the teams they'd have to go through to get to a Super Bowl. So what's your takeaway from their loss at home to the Chiefs?
Yeah, there's a silver lining. I mean, one, hey, it is the New England Patriots. I don't know if this offense is ever going to be anything special this year, but I think it'll be, you know, continue to be tinkered with to where it's more respectable than it is right now. But I don't think it's ever going to hit some stride where we're going to go, oh, they found what they needed to do, and now they're one of the better offenses in football. No, I've seen enough evidence now to know that's not going to happen. It's going to be a little bit of a struggle all year long. The game itself was crazy. I mean, you're right. One, the two blown calls there, you're going, holy cow, New England's going to win this game. But the other part of the game, I would sit there and go, it was 23-7, and the Chiefs had the ball at midfield, and I'm going, whoa, they're about to blow New England out, right, up into New England. So there was two sides to that story, but in a typical New England fashion, what do? They block a punt, then they force the Travis Kelce fumble, and all of a sudden we look up and go, they're kind of getting dominated, but what? They might have a chance to win the game? How is that? You know, Kansas City's defense has played better the last few weeks. Steve Spagnuolo, he does some creative things on defense. He did some New England things to New England. Double James White, double Julian Edelman. You know, showed a lot of like, oh, we're going to all-out blitz and then drop back into coverage. Then did all-out blitz in certain situations. So New England's offense has issues all around, Tom Brady included. He's not playing great. The O-line's not great. Yes, the weapons on the outside are nothing special, and I think Kansas City showed, along with the Houston Texans, who did a little bit of this too, like, if you double Julian Edelman, who else on New England is going to step up and beat you right now? And that's the big question, and I think that's the formula you're going to continue to see defenses do until somebody proves otherwise.
That 4th-and-3 toss, I talked about with Trent Dilfer yesterday. I just kind of want your take. I get that on tape it looks like Jacoby is open. On the other hand, he's got his best wide receiver on a corner out, And I feel like Edelman, had Edelman just stopped and made the defender come through him, it would have been a PI. So he could have, Brady could have thrown it a little bit further.
Sure.
Or a little bit sooner, or Edelman could have helped his quarterback out a little bit. I don't think it's as bad a misread as people who are watching the tape believe. As a guy who's been in that position and knows that offense, what's your take?
Yeah, I don't think it's a misread either. I mean, I think you hit a lot of the right points there. You know, first off, it's his best player. It's the one guy he trusts. I mean, you know, Jacoby had already dropped a pass in the end zone, so I'm sure he's a little unsure there. Two, when you all-out blitz, like, that's the route you want. See, when you all-out blitz and blitz everybody and there's no safety in the middle of the field, defenders play inside because they know they have no help there, so they try to cut off the inside. Therefore, you know, that's the route you really want. Bashaud Breeland did a great job. You know, the other thing, too, is, yeah, you're right, Julian maybe could have played it a little better where he slows down and then Breeland runs into him. And also, Brady doesn't need to fall down.
Right.
Nobody hits Brady and he falls down.
Like,
he
could have sat there. Stand tall in there and deliver the ball.
You could have maybe patted the ball one extra second to give him a little more time to separate, whatever it may be. But, yeah, I'm with you totally. But, you know, right now, New England's issues are across the board. Brady's 42. That's just the fact of the matter. And he's not capable of carrying the offense like he was years ago. And, of course, they're having issues at offensive line. They're not as dominant in running game. And we know the receiver issues are well documented as well.
I watched the Eagles last night. I understand that if Nelson Aguilar catches a ball against the Falcons, for example, they win that game. And there's several games in which if Nelson Aguilar just individually catches one more ball, they win the game.
The Patriots game.
Patriots game, right? In his hands in the end zone, unbelievable throw. He drops it. That said, you know, I mean, like DeSean Jackson's been hurt. Obviously, that hurts you, but he's older. Older guys get hurt. Alshon Jeffrey's kind of always hurt. Their defense isn't nearly what it used to be. I think they're closer to not a gut job, okay, but a remodel.
Yes.
I think they're closer to a remodel than they are a little bit of good luck and catches away from being a 10-win team. Where are you on the Eagles?
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, first off, you know, I don't like the criticism around Carson Wentz because I want, you know, you just kind of said it, like, who scares you in Philadelphia? I mean, come on. I think, Doug, you and me are as fast as some of the receivers that were out there last night. And certainly, just the normal everyday fan's not going to know who the hell those guys were he was throwing to. But, yeah, it's more than just like, oh, we got to go into this offseason and sign one or two guys and our problems are fixed. I agree with you. You know, they need, you know, a better group of running backs. They certainly need to revamp the wide receiver position. You know, the O-line, okay, that's good. They don't have to worry about that. The defense. The line's not been as dominant, so there's got to be some tinkering there. You know, you talk about the cornerback position. Obviously, you saw the first half. That was an issue. I got an issue with the game plan, too, as far as what they did on the defensive side of the ball. Guy has, you know, you got a guy in Eli Manning, yes, a Hall of Famer, but hasn't played football in 11 weeks. You're just going to line up and play man-to-man every play so he doesn't even have to think or do anything and just throw a slant or a fade route? Like, I didn't understand that. And, of course, the second half they adjusted. So I think there is a lot of things, like you said, remodeling is the perfect thing. They don't need to blow it up. There's still a lot of like key vital pieces that they got, but there's certainly a little work to do on that roster to improve it, to get it back to where it's Super Bowl worthy. Like right now, I don't even want them to make the playoffs. I don't want that team. They're boring. I don't want to watch. I'd rather watch Dallas. At least there's potential in Dallas right now. With the Eagles, I'm just going to go, oh my gosh, is every game going to be this gut-wrenching, you know, slam a throw in there for 5 yards every play, and that's all we're going to see? It's just kind of a boring watch, in my opinion.
Feels like Dallas is, like other teams, going to make a coaching change, barring some run in the playoffs.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the right fit there, right? There's talk of an Urban. There's talk of going and, you know, going to the college route. Like, who's the right fit if and when Jason Garrett does get the pink slip?
Yeah. I mean, Urban would certainly make sense. I do get that. You know, I don't think like I've heard the name Lincoln Riley thrown out there. Listen, I respect Lincoln Riley. Cliff Kingsbury's shown that you can adjust and go to the NFL and all that, but I don't think this is the proper team you want him to take over. This team's like ready to win right now. You know, you and I have talked about this. You go through every position on their football team except for safety, and you go, they're top five in football in that position. So it doesn't match up. The fact that they got a top 10 defense, a top 2 offense, and they're sitting here at 6-7, that tells you there's managing of the game, managing the team, managing of certain situations within the game are all going wrong. You know, and you need somewhat of a proven commodity. I like the offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore. I do think you need more of a little bit of a just a captain of the ship, proven, understands how to work with personalities, and will understand the little intricacies of certain situational football to go, ooh, this makes sense to get this guy in here. Urban Meyer would be that guy, and certainly not going to be intimidated by, like, the Cowboys, the Jones family, any of that. I guess my big thing there is just to make sure the coaching staff he could get around him. But, you know, I haven't thought about it a lot as far as names. I'll think about it more and give you some better answers next week.
All right, what's your impressions of the Rams? The defense looked dominant. They're back to giving Gurley the ball more.
Right.
But on football night in America, they basically led kickoff to finish. Are the Rams back?
Yeah, well, yeah, yes. I mean, I think first off, the Ravens game is more of like a blip on the radar than like what they actually are as a football team. You know, the Ravens are a special team this year. They went in there on fire, hot. It's a very tough matchup just as far as the players on the field and the way they play. But yeah, I think the Rams are going to be a pain in the butt. I would be shocked if they don't beat the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. You know, yes, they're giving the ball to Gurley more, and I think they're doing it more with like, first we're going to come out in the game and run screen and bootlegs and kind of get you stretched out horizontally, and then we're going to hit you vertically with the Todd Gurley run game. The defense is real. The only thing I really, you know, I mean, the only thing I really questioned it was whether it could stand up to some of the bigger offensive lines in football, like we saw with the Baltimore Ravens, but there was the Seattle Seahawks game, and they whooped the crap out of a bigger offensive line in that game, certainly. So I think the Rams, yes, if they can get in, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with. Either way, they can mess up the Cowboys, the 49ers plans, all of them here down the stretch and maybe mess up some seeding in the NFC playoffs.
When did Ryan Tannehill become Joe Montana?
Oh, yeah. Well, Ryan Tannehill's been better than people think or realize. Like, he's one of those guys, if we went back and sat down together and watched film in Miami, you'd go, man, he played a lot better than I realized when he was healthy. But every time things started to go good, he got hurt. Of course, didn't get to play in that playoff game that year. He's a pretty elite thrower of the football. He's a good athlete, as you see. And, you know, the thing I get blown away with every week, and I might have said this to you last week, is he maximizes what's there to be had on a week-to-week basis. You know, I watch some quarterbacks play games, and, you know, people will come away and go, whoa, look at the bottom line. He threw for 330 yards. And I go, yeah, that's great, but, like, he should have thrown for 500 yards today. There was, like, three post routes he missed and another touchdown pass he missed to maximize that. I come away watching Tennessee Titans games right now and going, man, there was 330 yards to get, and Ryan Tannehill got all 330. You know, that with the running game, and they have game plan-specific defense, right? Dean Pease, Mike Vrabel, that New England way. They do creative things every week. Got a lot of linebackers and defensive linemen and DBs to kind of mix and match personnel sets and confuse you that way. They're dangerous. They're certainly one of the hot teams in plus. They're different to me than the other years we've seen them be in this position, and that's because of the guy you mentioned. Ryan Tannehill is just a better quarterback, a better thrower than Marcus Mariota. Therefore, I just think they're that much more dangerous than we've seen in the past.
He's the one and only Chris Sims. You'll see him on Football Night in America and Pro Football Talk. Chris, great stuff. Merry Christmas to you, and thanks for joining us.
You're the man, Doug. I don't know if a few good men's top 10, but it's like top 20 for sure.
How could it not be top 10?
It's really good. I don't know. I haven't ranked my movies in a while.
You don't have to rank them. You don't have to rank them. Put it in the top 10. Thank you, Chris.
All right, see ya.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Jerry Jones was on 105. Jerry Jones is on the Dallas radio station he always goes on. This will be fun. Let's take a listen.
There was a report from Jane Slater on the NFL Network. Can you confirm that report? There's been a recent meeting between Steven or yourself and Urban Meyer.
That's not correct. I can confirm that it is absolutely not correct. We have not met with any coach, not met with any, specifically, why in answering that question, I don't want to imply that we wouldn't in a way that would diminish the credibility of the coach, or in this case, a player or somebody you're asking about. Normally when somebody says, have you met with such and such, are you interested in such and such, and you said, I have not, its implication is you're not interested. That shouldn't be brought forward either. The facts are we just have not talked to any coach, potential coach in the NFL.
Okay, that was the weirdest answer ever. This is the strangest relationship. This is like, look, everybody knows they're getting a divorce. Everyone is like, look, I haven't asked her out yet. It's not because I don't want to ask her out. It's not because I don't think she's hot. Just not single yet, right? You know? This is the kids are going to college, right? That's what this, wait for the kids to go to college. That's what it is. The kids go to college whenever the Cowboys lose their last game. That's what this is. I want to make sure this is clear. We have not met with any coach. Not because we're not interested. Not because we don't think he's awesome. Just because we're not allowed to. The team is leading their division. Okay? And when you win your division in the NFL, they have this super strange rule where you automatically get home field advantage. Yeah, we know your division sucks and you're below 500, but we're going to give you a home game. Why? I don't know. Seemed like the right thing to do. Not only that, so the team's leading the division, quarterback's healthy, running back's healthy, right? Everybody's healthy. Season not over. It's not like they're in. It's not like they're the Redskins who have fired their coach. It's not like they're the Giants who feel like they're going to fire their coach. It's the Cowboys who, they're in prime position. They've already beaten the Eagles. So the one team that they're tied with in their division, they hold the tiebreaker over. Now they got one more game left with them. And their owner, who's repeatedly been critical of the coaching, said nothing in terms of support for Jason Garrett, and simply said like, hey, I'm not saying we're not going to meet with Urban Meyer. We just haven't yet. That's what he said. We have not met with Urban Meyer yet. It's not because we don't think Urban Meyer's amazing. We're just not actually allowed to. I've literally never seen this before.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joel Klatt joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. Everything good with yesterday? Like, I was so fired up to talk to you, and then all of a sudden you couldn't join us. We're good, right? Like, nobody...
No, everything is fine. I'm in New York for the College Football Hall of Fame ceremony, National Football Foundation, and I was stepping into a big reception because it's Jim Delaney's last year as commissioner with the Big Ten, and so there you go.
I'm glad that you guys recognized him as such. I mean, he's had an amazing impact on college sports. And obviously, you know, they formed the Big Ten Network with changed everything. Okay, so Saturday night, a great comeback for Ohio State. All the guys at the dais, at the desk, I believe outside of Leinart, said that Ohio State should be number one. Who did you think should be number one?
I thought Ohio State deserved it. The committee had put them there the week before based on their strength, and then they beat another top 10 team by double digits. They had played maybe the worst half of football that they played all season in the first half, and yet still won by double digits. And what people fail to realize, Doug, is that was the third straight week, consecutive weeks, that they had faced an AP top 10 team and beaten them by double digits. If the shoe was on the other foot, and some SEC team had just done that, we would have been talking about this streak as it was so historic, and yet Ohio State doesn't get the benefit of the doubt because LSU looked good against a team that, quite frankly, I don't know how good they are in Georgia. They lost to South Carolina, for God's sake.
Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. I will point out that Wisconsin lost to Illinois, right? So, I mean, if you know, like
South Carolina is a 4-win team. Illinois is a 6-win team.
If Illinois plays South Carolina today, who would you pick to win?
Probably Illinois.
I think I'd pick South Carolina. But I like the Lovie story. He's going to stay gainfully employed, and they're going to make a bowl game. So you make a – and you've seen him. I've only seen him in highlights and loved their comebacks. But so I'll bow to you. Joel Klatt joining us in the Doug Gottlieb. Okay, so what really matters is I didn't feel like it was about being number one. It's about not playing number three. How good is, do we have any idea how good Clemson actually is because of the schedule they've played and dominated with the exception of the North Carolina game?
I think that's why being number one was so important, is because we don't know how good Clemson is. We think that they could be really good. They could be dominant for all we know, but we just haven't seen it. They've won 28 straight games. Their quarterback just won the national championship. Their head coach won two national championships. That's three seasons. Really good football team. We don't know. I think that's what's so interesting about this playoff, Doug, in this semifinal specifically, is that I know Ohio State is a really good football team, and I still think it's basically a coin flip because of the unknown of Clemson.
A number one team heading into the college football playoff has never actually won the thing. Do you think this changes? Because, you know, it's the old, does iron sharpen iron with those teams matching up? Whereas I don't think LSU has a walk in the park against Oklahoma, but they do appear to be a far superior team to Oklahoma. Gives them not a week off, but a better chance of prepping and maybe feeling better about themselves. Is this the year that changes?
Remember, LSU struggles with mobile quarterbacks. They gave up 400 yards to Ole Miss on the ground, 600 overall. And they better come to play. Their defense certainly looked better in the last couple of games, and I think that's why people are making them more of the prohibitive favorite against OU. OU is still a really good offense. Their defense seems to have figured it out, in particular in that Big 12 championship game. Yeah, I think LSU wins. And if there's a number one seed that's going to win the national championship, I think LSU would be in that mold. They can play really good offense. They can outscore you. I think their defense is much better than what they have been statistically. And they're going to be at home for the national championship. If they can get past OU, they're going to be in New Orleans. I think that's a huge benefit.
Yep, it absolutely is. You know, what's also weird is how the schedule works in terms of who's playing where now, which kind of brings me to your point about expanding the college football playoff. How would you handle it with the travel, right? Like, you'd still have a conference championship game, correct?
I would highly doubt that these guys would get rid of conference championship.
Too much money.
Yeah.
Too much money, and it's really hard to decide a true conference champion when sometimes teams don't actually play each other during the year. So if you have that, then you have what? Home sites for the first round?
Oh, man. I have no idea. You know, like, I'm not an expansion guy. I wanted to stay at four. I just want you to have to win your conference in order to go. That being said, I think that they'll ultimately do home sites when it grows. Doug, it's growing in the next three seasons. There's not a doubt in my mind. I think maybe long-term would be four seasons. I think it grows within three seasons. Not next year, maybe the year following in a quick turnaround, but definitely that next season, I think that we're going to have an 18 playoff. They're going to keep conference championship games. My guess is they'll go back to a host site to try to reward people for a better regular season by giving them a home game.
The problem with that one is a couple, you're going to have 16 games for whoever plays in the championship.
Exactly.
Are you going to have enough bodies in 16 games?
Well, this is what also bothers me, is that the powers that be will be like, oh, player safety, and yet they won't change the rule to stop the game clock outside of 2 minutes after every first down. So we allow the game clock to stop. And over the course of the season, people are playing between 80 and 150 extra snaps of football just based on clock mechanics. And so all of a sudden you're going to be concerned about player safety because it's a 16th game. I can remove a whole game worth of snaps just through clock rules, which will not change the actual fundamentals of the game at all.
Joel Klatt joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show. That is a great point. Not a good point. That is a great and super important point that I think people inside football know and other people don't understand. Every time you add to those snaps, you're adding more concussions, beating up players more. It's rough, right? And it's going to be hard to field enough teams and get kids to play in bowl games if they're putting their body through all of those extra snaps when some of them are preparing for the future or some of them getting hurt along the way. He joins us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let's go back to the games. How does Ohio State match up with Clemson?
This is a great matchup because I think these two teams are the most balanced teams in the country. They've got really quarterbacks, great defenses. I think that overall the talent is probably better for Ohio State as far as draft picks, in particular on their defense. And if you're going to stop a pocket passer, what do you need? A great pass rush? That's exactly what Ohio State has. The reason Chase Young didn't have any sacks in the last two games, Doug, is Michigan had three guys on him. Wisconsin had three guys on him. It was opening up other rushers to get pressure on the quarterback. If Fields is healthy, I think they are a dynamic team. When he's converting first downs on third downs with his legs, that's just a big part of their offense. I'm going to lean towards Ohio State, but I do think it's a bit of a coin flip. I think that's the best game that we've got.
Last thing, USC decides to not change coaches. Is that a mistake?
I don't know if it's a mistake. I wonder what they're thinking about in terms of recruiting. If you look at the top 24 players from the state of California, they had zero commitments for this season.
Right.
You can't have that.
Right.
But
they kind of did that to themselves, right? Because they left him hanging so long. Now, look, kids do commit later, and they decommit all the time. They've had some actually decommit. The top quarterback in the state decommitted and went to Alabama, so things can change. But USC does this to themselves.
They do, and that's what I've argued for the last 2 years, is that this instability, whether it was from the president position or the AD position, or even the instability surrounding the head coach and the speculation about his status, that hurts recruiting. If this is going to continue and everyone's going to be speculating about his job status, it's going to continue to hurt recruiting into next year. I have many people tell me, Doug, that this situation and the fact that the president wanted to be more involved in the head coaching decision and the pool of money, if they wanted to make a change, was smaller than most people thought based on the fact that they've paid out over $450 million to settlements outside the athletic department. All of that made it less of an attractive job from an AD standpoint, which is in large part the reason why they had to kind of settle on Mike Bone. He was not on the radar originally. And they had to kind of settle on Mike. And now, when you look at what USC is, they need consistency because of the recruiting piece.
Great stuff. Joel Klatt. Joel, enjoy New York. You had an incredible year. By the way, whoever cuts your hair, I find zero flaws with your hair, which really disgusts me at our age. I appreciate you joining us.
Hey, that's the best compliment I've gotten.
All right. Good enough.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate you, bud.
I mean, we live in the same area. You could tell me who cuts your hair. That's what you could do.